I need to tell you not to get used to short scripture passages like this, because this is one of the shorter passages we're going to have all fall. Now the Lord said to Abram, go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you. I will make of you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you, I will curse. And in you, all the families of the earth shall be blessed. So Abram went, as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. Abram took his wife Sarai and his brother's son Lot and all the possessions that they had gathered and the persons whom they had acquired in Haran, and they set forth to go to the land of Canaan. When they come to the land of Canaan, Abram passed through the land to the place at Shechem, to the oak of Moreh. At that time, the Canaanites were in the land. Then the Lord appeared to Abram and said, to your offspring, I will give this land. So he built there an altar to the Lord, who had appeared to him. From there, he moved on to the hill country to the east of Bethel and pitched his tent with Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. And there he built an altar to the Lord and invoked the name of the Lord. And Abram journeyed on by stages towards the Negev. Friends, this is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. We've had two passages in the last 2 weeks that sort of start off the same kind of way. There's God, and there's this human being, and they're chatting, I guess, is for lack of a better word. They're conversing. They're having a conversation. Now, last week with Noah, we got a little bit of a setup that Noah was righteous, was upright in his generation, walked with God. There is no sense that Abram knows who God is. I mean, we kind of extrapolate that he's Noah's great, 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 great grandson. And so clearly he needs to know something about God. But let's be honest, how many folks do we know whose grandparents have known the Lord who have no clue who the Lord is? So I think it's a dangerous assumption for us to assume that just because he's in the lineage, that he knows who God is faithful, all of those things. The Jewish Midrash, in struggling to address this issue, as they've been doing for almost 4,000 years, actually has Terah, Abram's father, as a professional maker of idols, which would certainly indicate something off in the lineage and the worship life. So instead of getting him set up as an upright and righteous person, essentially, God comes to Abram and says, Abram, move. And Abram moves. Now, like, that's an incredible act of faith. It is, we discussed in Sunday school, kind of like when we get in the trucks in Malawi at the beginning of the day, and we say, tell us where we're supposed to go, where we're supposed to turn, and where we're supposed to stop. Because frankly, we have no idea where we're going, how to get there, or when we'll know that we're there. It is also like driving a teenage friend home if you've never been to their house. You should have turned there. I can't believe you didn't know that. You know, that is how life sometimes works. And we see this sense of go and I'll tell you where to turn in our daily lives, but not perhaps on this scale, right? So it starts off as though it's just Abram and God. Just Abram and God. Like it was just Noah and God. But then I want us to notice that pretty quickly, about verse 3, about verse 4, suddenly there's this whole crowd of people that is going to go with Abram. Now, as people of faith, we usually don't talk about the crowd that goes with Abram. After all, we are people who are going to worship the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, but that's just Abraham and his son and his grandson. We're not going to get the crowd. We're not going to get the servants. We're not going to get the wives. We're not going to get the nephew, who actually has a pretty significant role to play in the story that comes up. And I think often that's how our faith journeys, we've been told, should be, is a one-on-one of us with God, of us with Jesus, and it's just me and Jesus. But it doesn't take long before we zoom out, and there has to be more to it than me and Jesus, than Abram and God. And so we're going to look at that. Because it doesn't take long. I mean, really, by the end of verse 3, we've zoomed. Okay, how far out have we zoomed? We've zoomed from Abram, tight frame on one face, to all the families of the earth shall be blessed. That is as wide angle a lens as I can give you. We tell this story so often as the calling of Abraham is the selection of one family by God to be a light to the world. But it's not just to be a light, it's to be a blessing. So we have this challenge here that what are we going to do if Abram messes up? I mean, think about it. We're pinning all of our hopes on Abram. But more importantly than that, let's look at how the story actually plays out. Abram is 75 years old, which ought to tell you that when the nominating committee comes to ask and you say, I'm 70 years old, that's not a good enough excuse. And God says, pack up everything and go, and I'll tell you when to stop. And your family, your lineage, your people are going to exist forever. And they are going to be a blessing to all of creation, to all the families of the earth. And did I mention that Abraham and Sarah have no kids? So either you're Abram and you go, Lord, I think you're at the wrong door. Or there's a leap of faith that has to be made about a promise that is so far out that it's not even able to be imagined as being real. I mean, this promise to Abram that we hear other places in Scripture as well is going to be that his offspring will be more numerous than the stars of the sky or the sand of the sea. And the guy is 75 and he has no kids. That is a serious leap of faith. That is a serious holding on to hope that has to be kept alive actively. We're not going to actually get this child born for about another 20 years. I don't know about you, but in my prayer life, I'm a lot more impatient than that. There was an old Bloom County cartoon strip once upon a time that had one of the characters talking to George Lucas, and this was the 1980s, so Star Wars was a thing. I say that as though it's not a thing in 2022. But the young boy had a lightsaber, and he said, so when are we getting the next Star Wars movie? And George Lucas said, oh, about 1999. And the young boy cut off his head and said, Jedi Knights do not wait 17 years for a sequel. We don't wait 17 years for a sequel. How are we going to wait 20 years for a child? We are an impatient people, by and large. Most of us probably get antsy if somebody hasn't texted us back in 5 minutes. And so there is this piece to Abram's faith that is big because the promise is big, but the promise is also big out there. You know, this is not a promise that is going to be shown to be true the next day, the next hour, the next week. It is going to take time. I think that is one of the challenges of faith that we need to pay attention to and watch carefully. I mean, when we do prayer time later, we're going to pray about things this week and right now. But this huge covenant, this huge, massive covenant, I mean, let's get serious here. The Abrahamic faiths between the three of them are nearly 40% of the world's population and over 3 billion people. Raise your hand if you saw that coming when Abraham was 75 years old with no kids. One of our challenges in faith is to be a little more like God and look a little farther ahead. I often joke that church buildings are a lot like hospitals and universities. Almost none of them are built in one phase. And so there are some oddities to almost every church building. Now, this building did not have a portico, which as many times as it's been hit, I'm beginning to think was a good decision. Had a flat roof and buried all of the electrical and all of the ductwork in the concrete slab beneath our feet. And Claire just facepalmed over in the corner. Now, we have a choice as the church 60 some odd years later, because it is almost exactly 60 years later. We can believe that those people were malicious, knowing that they were going to get those people in 60 years when everything started to break by doing it this way. Or we can believe that the people did the best they could with the knowledge they had at the time. Now, none of us would build a flat roof today. And none of us would put the electrical in the slab today. At the time, that was how you did commercial construction. We have this challenge as people of faith that is most obvious sometimes in our buildings to think about the future, to think about the people who will inherit the promise in the future. When this church was built, Westminster was dirt and gravel and is named Westminster because it's on the corner with the Presbyterian Church. Not the other way around. The crazy Presbyterians moving out to the edge of town. You know, it'll never fly out there. There's nothing out there. There was a vision. There was a sense that this was where things were going and that the church needed to be present where things were going, not just where things had been. Now, 60 years later, we are finally seeing a little bit of a rebirth on the square. But the entire time I've been in town, everybody has complained about how there's nothing on the square. Pretty prescient folks, those Presbyterians 60 years ago. The promise of being at 1200 South Carbon was not visible in 1962. It was hoped for. It was desired, but it was not visible. And that is the promise that Abram has in front of himself as well. There is a promise for hopefulness, for faithfulness, for what might be, but cannot yet be seen. It's a pretty gutsy move, isn't it? Move out of the town where you buried your father to go until God says stop. To believe that after 75 years of no offspring, because I do not believe they had not been trying, that suddenly you're going to have a kid. And that is going to turn into much, much more. I think that's one of our personal challenges in faith, is to look beyond ourselves. We build a church. Why? Not the building, but the people. Why? We believe there's something to the gospel that people need to know and people need to be raised in. People need to have to hold on to. People need to have to celebrate and share. no two churches I've ever been in celebrate the gospel the same way. But we believe that this is an important thing to do and an important thing to share. And so here we sit. And I don't think any church is built saying, well, as soon as all of the founding members are dead, that's great, we're done. Right? There's a sense that these things are to be churches for the ages, for decades, for centuries, for generations. None of our founding members from 1907 still worship here. But what they put in place, the stories they told, the faith they modeled, still echoes in the building. It's not even the same building. It's not at the same place. It's not the same physical people, but it is the same people of God. Do you think the folks who set this place up in 1907 on North Market with a building they bought from the Methodists could imagine the fact that we can put our worship on TV every Sunday? They didn't even know what TV was. Right? So here we are. They set a table with a basketball court and a dancing place in the basement of the church, those rowdy Presbyterians in the early 20th century holding dances. Oh my, oh my, scandalous. We've not been, as far as I can tell, particularly well behaved since then. And those are things that echo. Abraham's faith echoes. It echoes in over 3 billion lives right now on the face of the earth. A sense that God's promise, which is on some levels inconceivable, so far out, so hard to believe, did and is real today and has been for thousands of years. And at that point, it's not really Abram's anymore, is it? It's Abram's and Sarai's and Lot's. It's going to be Hagar's. It's going to be Isaac's and Ishmael's. After that, it starts to get really complicated on the family tree. We lose something if we only zoom in on Abram and God here. So my question for each of us today is, first of all, whose faith echoes in your lives? When we zoom out on where you are in your faith journey, whose faith is echoing in your life? How do you feel that God is calling you to be a blessing? Not just, you know, short term around the house, but big picture blessing in the world. And what promise of God do you believe is too far out to be real that you might need to start believing is real? We won't do much more with Abram and Sarai from the pulpit, from the lectionary. So in 20 years, they're going to have, well, in the next 20 years, they're going to have a series of adventures. They're going to go down to Egypt. The Pharaoh is going to fall for Sarah. who Abram has said is his sister, not his wife. That's going to get things in trouble. Pharaoh is going to be mad because Pharaoh's religious leaders have gotten a message from God that he's not supposed to do this. Pharaoh gets mad at Abram. Why did you tell me she's your sister? If she's your sister, she's fair game. She's your wife. Abram does that not once, but twice in the narrative in Genesis. They travel. Lot settles in a place named Sodom. Maybe you've heard of it. Abram argues with God about whether Sodom and Gomorrah should be destroyed. At the same time that Abram has the audacity to argue with God about this destruction, he and Sarah are laughing at God when God says, you're going to have a kid. Like right now, I mean it. They're going to force God's hand a little bit by handing Hagar to Abram and Hagar having a son, Ishmael. And then they're going to have a son, Isaac. And then Abram is going to take Isaac to the mountain, prepared to sacrifice their son. And then there's going to be a miraculous finding of a ram in the bushes. And I think trust between father and son broken for all time. And then they're going to go home. And then we're going to page into the life of Isaac. And then we'll page into the life of Isaac's family. And then we'll page into his grandchildren. And that is where we will find ourselves next week, is all the way down the line with Joseph. All the way down the line with Joseph. And just think, all of those stories, which we tell children, we learn, we know, they go to Broadway. These stories go to Broadway. Come on. Start from this place of, if not impossible, highly, highly improbable. 75, no kids, nowhere to go, no family left. Drive until I tell you to stop, Abram. What happens when we zoom out on the promises of God? What then do we see God at work doing? To God alone be the glory this day and forevermore. Amen.